From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hodags, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils.
And hobos.
So keep it tuned. Right here. How many of you folks are aware that Josh is doing special field reports, even though he doesn't often have the opportunity to join us on the air here at WWNC? Speaking of strange, he's doing Speaking of Strange reports intermittently, and those special reports are available at the Speaking of Strange website, speakingofstrange.com, at the podcast link. And the most recent one that just came out last Sunday is on the Vampire of Mocha. You may not know about the Vampire of Mocha. It's a Puerto Rican mystery, a cryptozoological mystery, perhaps? Anyway, a story to give you goosebumps. After sharing a chilling story, Josh will tell you about his recent investigation of a creature in Puerto Rico called the Vampire of Mocha. So go to speakingofstrange.com and click the podcast link. Of course, you can listen to all back episodes of Speaking of Strange, dozens and dozens of past episodes of Speaking of Strange. And the Vampire of Mocha report is about 52 minutes. So if you got a good extra hour of listening to devote to all things JPW and Speaking of Strange, check out that May 21st Speaking of Strange report on the Vampire of Mocha.
Yeah, this is kind of weird. A few minutes ago during the break, I had to run out and take care of some radio station business on the other side of the building. It's very dark out, you know, in these parts, and I always get a little spooked. Me and Shelly have gone to the other building late at night before, and it's spooky over there. And there's just supposed to be a ghost over there. And it's just weird. It's very dark out here. And I was actually thinking, I was like, I'm going to send Vance on a field report to the other building while we're in here in the studio, and you can, like, give us reports of, like, because I guarantee you get creeped. I don't think you've ever been in there.
Like, no.
Oh, it's creepy.
Late at night in the dark and everything. Yeah. And you could, like, call in and be like, okay, I'm going down the hall. Like, you'd only be a couple hundred yards away, but, you know. You'd still be in the field.
I don't know. Maybe we need to put Shelly over there by herself and let her phone in. Would you do it, Shelly?
Well, I suppose I could do it.
Would you? Because I have to go in there later tonight by myself. I hate going in there by myself.
I'll go in there with you. You don't have to go in there by yourself.
Well, we can. We need to make it like Joshua's Alone in a Haunted House. Have you ever seen that documentary?
No.
The theme, reality television is full of people going and staying in haunted locations. But Josh was a pioneer in that kind of docudrama.
True.
When he did a video called Alone in a Haunted House. I've got the DVD at the house.
What was the location?
It's a location that he was not at liberty to disclose. It is a private residence, but it's a large house, purportedly haunted. And Josh just went there and set up his gear and spent the night in there alone.
Did you ever sneak back in the day when you were able to do it?
No, I went to a haunted house that they had in one of the TV Sands during Halloween back in the 90s. That was really great. You know, they had somebody with a chainsaw dressed up like Leatherface chasing you out, and it was really good.
And sneaking into that building, that's one of the scariest places I've ever been in. Like, you know, you get that adrenaline rush from having to, like, I don't think it's a federal offense now, too.
It is.
But back then, it was in the 90s. It was a different time.
Right, they're remodeling the second one. One of them is now the Western Regional Archives building. I've been in there since they remodeled it. If you're a history buff, you might want to drop by the Western State Archives. The Western Regional State Archives there off Riceville Road in Oteen. And, yeah, they've done a fabulous job of remodeling that old building. But you're right, when it was abandoned and creepy like that,
well, the big building is still all fenced off, right? Like, I heard a rumor that they were actually finally going to knock it down. I believe that the reason that they haven't, it's still there, right?
We may be talking about other buildings.
We're talking about the main one on Riceville Road, the main hospital.
The one that's fenced in with the razor, I think there's razor wire on top. It used to be one of the J.C.'s haunted houses.
Right.
Yeah.
Each year. A lot of fun.
But this the big one would not have been able to have been restored, I don't believe.
Well, and they had
a lot of asbestos.
Yeah. I think that's why they, that's why they closed it up.
Hmm. A lot of work went into that Western Regional Archives building.
The ones
anyway,
on either
so
side
check
of it.
That out.
Those were like the doctors' quarters and the nurses.
Right. And they're still boarders, people from the hospital that stay in some of those houses there along Riceville Road. Anyway, too Asheville-centric, guys.
Well,
but
if you haven't been there, then come to Asheville and check it out.
It is something neat, and you were right, one of the creepiest places. And you snuck in there?
I was back in like 97 or whatever. And, I mean, there was still papers all over the floor, you know, like boxes of records from patients.
Right.
There was still like tables in there and like, you know, obscure medical equipment and stuff, like dead bird skeletons and stuff too. And it was really, you had to shimmy in on your belly, like on the dirt from the sub basement. Like it was, And the other place was the inn over there on Cades Cove in between Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge, the Wonderland Inn. You should do some research on that place. It has since totally been gone, but it was a U.S. The government owned it. It was a very fancy hotel at one point in time, and the forest had eaten it up. And it was awesome. There's a really good video of a guy before it got totally ran down of him going through there. And there was like two big hotel buildings, one which had collapsed. The other one had razor wire around it. You could still get in it. I think it has since collapsed or burned or something. But then throughout the woods, there was about 15, 20 houses that housed workers and stuff through there. But it would be like this beautiful, huge stone deck over the river with like a house with trees growing through it and everything. It was pretty dangerous. There's a lot of bears out there. That was really scary, too. Like, really scary.
Sounds kind of like Lost Cove. There are a lot of these sort of ghost towns in the mountains, but that was the Wonderland Inn.
It was the Wonderland. I don't know if it was Inn or the Wonderland Hotel, something of that nature. That would be something else that, like, every community around the country has. The haunted house, the local, scary place you were talking about. Sure, there's a lot of abandoned sanatoriums.
Absolutely. Let's change gears real quick. Here's something a little off the paranormal topic, but curious, at least. And we can tease kind of the sort of off-kilter stuff that Dark 30 is going to take us even further down the naughty roads of bizarre news. But this one will work this hour. If the secret to a happy marriage is finding the right person, we can all stop looking, at least according to sologamists. They're part of a growing relationship trend in which people are tying the knot to themselves. One 37-year-old woman who recently married herself was interviewed. I would describe it as women saying yes to themselves. It means that we are enough, even if we are not partnered with someone else. In many ways, the 37-year-old bride looked like any other on her wedding day. She wore a white dress and had a bouquet. Anderson looked stunning with the Brooklyn Bridge and New York City skyline behind her, except when she walked down the aisle, no one was waiting for her. That's just the way she wanted it. The woman said she grew tired of people asking why she was still single, so in front of family and friends, she married herself. Self-marriage, or sologamy, is growing, partly because it's popping up in pop culture, like when an episode of Sex and the City floated the idea. Now the movement has gone global and companies are trying to capitalize. Marry Yourself in Canada offers consulting and wedding photography. There's also iMarriedMe.com, launched by San Francisco man. His site offers sologamy ceremony kits, which include a wedding band, daily affirmation cards, and vows. The 37-year-old woman just celebrated her one-year anniversary with a solo trip to Mexico. She said even though she's married to herself, she's dating and open to marrying another person.
Can I just say it's one of the stupider things I've ever heard. And if I ever got married to myself, I would be divorced in less than 3 months because I hate myself. And
you're too demanding of yourself.
It would just end it in tears.
Sologamy. Yeah. Ridiculous. Some of this stuff you just can't make up. You wouldn't want to make something like that up. It's rather depressing, if you ask me.
It is.
It says that this one company sells sologamy self-marriage kits. You don't sell any self-marriage ceremony kits over at Nevermore Mystical Arts, do you? Make me fall in love with myself romance packages with candles and everything. No, but what you do have over there that's really neat, you've got votives. You've got 10-hour votive candles.
Yeah.
You were telling me that these little jokers burn for 10 hours?
10 hours, and they burn completely. They don't just stop halfway through and then you're done. I mean, they go the entire distance.
And they're all dressed and oiled and signify a certain purpose.
Exactly.
The different candles.
Exactly.
That's something that you can pick up and take home and see if it works for you. You got
exactly
all sorts of luck and wealth and romance and
prosperity.
The good stuff. Yeah, Shelley's shop, folks. Nevermore Mystical Arts, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. That's just a couple miles off of I-40 out Sweeten Creek Road there. And right next to Wright's Coin Shop.
And we'll be closed for Memorial Day.
Okay.
By the way. And the coin shop will too.
That's a good point to bring up. So Monday coming up.
Won't be there. I'll be closed, but I'll see everybody on Tuesday.
Yeah, sounds good. Folks, what do you think about marrying yourself?
If you married yourself, Vance, what would you do for your honeymoon?
If I married myself, I would probably go to Scotland for my honeymoon and just like wander around on the heath alone and sad and possibly take my own life.
I was going to say it's sad and suicidal.
I would get a Shetland Isle wool sweater first, then take my life.
Just me and the pygmy pony over by the dental floss bush. Yeah, I might move to Montana soon if I were married to myself. Kind of pathetic.
Like a Brokeback Mountain kind of thing?
Folks, it's Speaking of Strange, off the rails as per usual, and we'll be right back after these messages. Stick with us.
Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. All right, yeah.
Welcome back to Speaking of strange, I'm Vance Pollock in the studio with Shelley Wright and Sam Steele, and we're talking about things that rather transcend your immediate location. They're stories that somehow excite the imagination and seem to carry over, whether they're reinvented or retold across the country, across the globe, for all I know, or if they just seem to happen once ever so often. The example, the thing that occurred to me, of course, I applied the paranormal theme to it immediately, the ghost stories and hauntings, things of that nature. But it's a story that's just more local lore. And that was in the town where I grew up in Florida. South of town, kind of out on the outskirts, very rural area. There was an old man and an old woman who had a shed in the backyard in which was parked a Corvette, a fancy Corvette, like a, we'll say, mid-60s vet parked out there. And people would always stop and ask him, what are you going to do with that vet? Offering to buy the Corvette. And it sat there for years and years and years and rotted down. And the rumor was, turned out to be true, because in recent years, they finally, I don't know if one or the other of them died or if they realized that their end was coming, that their time was short, they did sell it, and it was restored. And some people from my hometown had posted photos of the restoration from like a classic car magazine that told the story with photographs and showed this Corvette restored and at the car shows that I had seen rusting down out there in the shed behind these people's house for years. I mean, it sat there for decades, something like 45 years. And here's why. The man and woman's son got that Corvette and was then drafted and went to Vietnam. Never came home from Vietnam. Oh. And so out of respect to his memory and his possessions, they could never part with that car. Even if the idea was, well, if somebody else gets it, they'll love it and appreciate it and take care of it. Finally, I think that's what made them, you persuaded them to part with it. But that car sat there, you know, growing mold for 45 years until finally it was somebody was allowed to buy it and restore it. And it's a beautiful car. But I was talking to a friend of mine at work, and he said, I used to drive a route truck out in Missouri, and there was a Shelby Cobra parked in a shed behind a man's house. The only way you would know it was there is if you were behind the man's house and he was out there checking some meters or on the power lines or whatever. And he asked the man, he walked up to the man when he was out in the yard one day and asked him about that Shelby Cobra you got parked out there in the barn that rusted down, you know, flat tires rotting into the ground. And he said, that car will never move again. That car will never run again. And he was like, he could tell the man was upset about it. And he was like, I mean, I don't mean to pry, but I mean, I honestly can appreciate that this is something very sentimental. What is the story? And the man said, my son committed suicide in that car.
Yikes.
He ran the garden hose from the exhaust into the back seat or whatever and sat in there with the motor running until he asphyxiated in that car. And he said, when my son was alive, he and I didn't get along very well, and I paid more attention to that car than I did my son, and he got to be, you know, 16, 17 years old. I would never let him borrow the car because it was Shelby. You know, I'm not going to let my 17-year-old son drive my Shelby. And he said, I was at work one day, and I was supposed to get home at 4 o'clock, and my boss asked me to work later. When I got home about 6:30 or 7 o'clock, I found my son dead in that car. Now, the way asphyxiation like that works and the way the coroner figured it out was that if he had gotten off of work at 4 o'clock and come home, he probably would have found his son in the process of trying to asphyxiate himself in the car, or maybe a cry for attention or something like that, probably would have rescued him. And maybe it, somehow in his son's mind, this was a cry for help, or
not a real suicide or for
attention. But the fact that he just happened to work late that night, and when he came home, his son was dead, and he said that car will never drive again. That car's going to stay right where it is until it, you know, rusts into the ground. Of course, you know, when he passes away, his estate will probably, pass that along. Have you ever heard, the car that no one will part with story? I think it's a pretty common one. I've heard people refer to it for other...
I've heard plenty of stories about people not wanting to part with cars.
Well, basically the story about someone who is keeping someone who has passed away, who is just keeping their car in their memory and not allowing it to be restored or driven.
I haven't heard the car one that much. I mean, I've heard like rooms, like the bedroom.
Yeah.
Like a shrine, keeping it.
That's probably pretty common. Have you ever seen a room where someone deceased had lived that was kept just the way it was while they were living, Shelley?
You mean other than the Psycho movie?
other than
the
Psycho?
I don't think so. Now, I was going to say something about the car thing. This is a little bit different take on it. Dad had a black truck one time, and I remember getting in that thing, and I said, Dad, you need to get rid of this thing. Something bad happened in here. You need to get rid of this now. And it wasn't too long after that he did. He, I think, felt the same thing I did in there. It was this worst sense of foreboding. It was horrible. It was heavy. It was just gave you the creeps. It was, you need to get rid of this now. And it wasn't too long after that he did, and I was glad. I was scared for him. I thought something would happen to him. Something had happened to somebody else in it. Something was going to happen to him.
You just had a sense of that? Did you ever find out what the history of the car or the truck was?
I didn't. I'll have to ask him if he knew of anything.
But he eventually came around to that sense that this...
Pretty darn
this
quickly.
Is a bad luck. Bad luck truck.
Bad luck truck.
Wow. Just instinct, just kind of intuition, a hunch.
Oh, yeah. That, and one of those things you can't keep to yourself. You blurt it out. You know, when it's something that you need to say and you know that you need to say it, you say it. You don't care how you sound. You just get it out.
I kind of had the opposite feeling. I've owned a couple of cars that I didn't develop familiarity or a relationship with. A piece of junk, a little Ford Focus I drive now, and a little hamster wheel for a motor. But when I the car
really
I had before, the car I had before I put a couple 100,000 miles on, man, and it was just like an extension of myself. Delivered a lot of pies in that car. Pizza parallels. lots of pizzas were delivered hot and fresh to your door throughout South Buncombe in that one. And it really did feel familiar and like an old friend. So when the transmission blew out on that thing over on Brevard Road and I had to put it in neutral and roll it, I had to roll down the hill on Brevard Road to the armory there and park it and get it towed off for scrap. It was a sad thing, but I don't know. Maybe it's time to watch Christine again. Were we on a car theme? But no, that was the example I just wanted to set for stories that seem to have their parallel state to state, even city to city, And we'll get into some more of this sort of urban myths, because Shelley took the time to make a list, make a few notes about the sort of urban myths. And how many of these, when we get back from the break, have you heard of? There's so many of them. I mean, there's a movie franchise based on a lot of them, as a matter of fact. But I think some of these may just have that grain of truth, that kernel of truth we were talking about, and maybe not all that outlandish. So let's delve into what I call suburban myths when we get back from this break. You're listening to Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. Drop by the website, speakingofstrange.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. Vance Pollock hosting. That's me. Shelley Wright, Investigator Shelley Wright. Investigator Shelley Wright did some investigating, just because I kind of offhanded said, hey, how about this week we talk about some of these legends and how they bear on the stories we tell? You all grew up with weird stories like that. I mean, maybe your parents weren't the ones that told ghost stories around the campfire, but gradually, eventually, as you got into middle school and high school, you started to hear these stories, share these stories around. Were they created out of whole cloth, or was there a kernel of truth? Who knows? In every case, some of these might be difficult to track back to their source. But Shelley, give us some examples of the sort of urban legends that you ran across there, and then we'll all chime in and, whether or not we've heard similar stories.
The Funhouse Mummy. It seems as though at Halloween time you go, I guess, to a carnival, and there's some prop in there that's supposed to be a mummy or a body or something, and it turns out to be real. Well, we had something like that in Asheville. We actually did. It was an embalmed guy named the Duke, and
yeah.
And they used to sit him in a car and take him out when we had parades.
Really?
Yeah.
Who, like the Shriners, or like who would take him out?
That's the question. The Undertakers, who had custody of his body. The man's genuine name was Sidney LaSalle, but he was a con man and a bigamist, and he traveled under the name of Sir Charles Asquith and several other names. But when he arrived in Asheville in 1904 or 5, if I can recall, he was suffering from tuberculosis, and he died a short time later. And even though he had told local folks that he was the cousin of a member of the House of Lords in England, a very well-to-do family, and that they would take care of his expenses after he died, and his private nurse and doctor that he had brought with him to Asheville didn't get paid. They found out he had something like $2 in his pocket. They sent a telegram to England, and nobody knew who he was. And it was years before they finally decided, this is Sidney LaSalle, the notorious con man and bigamist. He had been married something like 18 or 19 times that they could document. But his body, perfectly embalmed, because here's the thing. When this wealthy man passed away, the Nolan Brown Undertaking Parlor over on Church Street wanted to make a good impression on these wealthy people who back in England, so they used their most skilled, they mummified this guy. They prepared the body very, very carefully and very tediously to be returned to his family in England. And then when word came from England that we don't know this dude and we don't surely don't want the body and we're not going to pay for the embalming, Nolan Brown Funeral Parlor kept it as, you know, an example of their art. In the showroom, when you would go to the funeral parlor, they would say, yeah, we're really good at embalming. Here's an example. Here's the Duke.
Exactly.
And one of the stories that the people from the funeral parlor liked to tell was that they kept him in a room up at the top of some stairs, and some guy came in asking for a job one time. And they said, I'm not the person to talk to. You need to talk to the boss. He's in that room up there at the top of the stairs. And so they sent this job seeker up to the little room where they kept the Duke, and he stepped in and introduced himself and then immediately turned around and came running down the stairs and out the door, never to be seen again.
Oh, that's funny.
So, but Sam, yeah, the story is, and it's a reliable story, that they would parade this mummy around Asheville.
At the Christmas parade?
just on a whim, May
on
Day
Wednesdays.
Or yeah, Wednesdays, take him out for a stroll, that he was known about town, and that
you try would, to do that prank now for, and
try and parade a corpse around Asheville these days. And
I tell you,
well, you know, I swear I thought my grandmother used to tell a story, sounded a lot like the Duke. An embalmed guy, didn't get claimed, and that they sat him in the corner while they played poker.
I this might sound a little morbid, but I have a cat. You know, I love Maxie.
Right.
And, you know, I'm aware that one day he will pass, as we all shall, ashes, dust to dust. And I would like to get my cat embalmed, or like make him into like a mummy cat. Like
taxidermied cat.
And, like, you know, I have, like, some pictures of him, like, on his back playing. He's a big boy. But I've often said that if I were to go before my time, you know, just go ahead and have me taxidermy. I mean, I don't think it's something that you can get done at most shops. I think it's, like, illegal or something.
I think it is.
I'm sure there's somebody that you could find to do it on the DL, on the down low.
Oh, yeah.
But wouldn't that be kind of cool? You use me as, a coat rack or something? Would you put? Would you keep me, my embalmed, like, taxidermied corpse in your home?
You could be in Joshua P. Warren's mystery museum.
Exactly.
I know he would take it. But would I want to be there for the rest of my life?
He would rather be with me.
Yes.
Would you keep him around your house?
I would keep Sam around if he wanted me to.
And you could put a smile on my face, or you could have my ever so present scowl.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
So that's a no from Vance.
I don't think I could keep you around, Sam. I might come visit you in the Mystery Museum.
What if you made me into like a speaker or something? I'm up for utilitarian uses.
But does your cat come with you?
Well, if he's already dead.
If he's already dead and taxidermy.
Yeah, then
you get
sure.
The pair.
You get the pair.
It's a pair.
It's a combo. Bundle us up.
But a few years ago, it was around Halloween time, and a woman had been murdered and discarded, and she, the next morning, was hanging in, like, a fence next to a field, and people were driving by on their morning commute and thought that it was just a Halloween decoration.
Wasn't it Josh that used to always say, like, if you wanted to... Maybe he spent too much time thinking about this. Commit the perfect murder or whatever, like, go to, like, one of those... haunted, maze things, like where it's outdoors and, like, sort of like you said earlier, and you got, like, Leatherface chasing you. What if you just dressed up like Leatherface and you had a real chainsaw and everybody was just like, oh, that's the guy who's dressed up as Leatherface chasing the kids and you just were killing people. And then, like, bam, you're back off into the woods and nobody's any the wiser.
That's scary.
That's terrifying, is it not?
It is.
Only from the mind of Joshua P. Warren.
I can't say for sure. I think that was him.
What about the Gringo Maniac murder spree? Is that the name of it? The most recent Joshua P. Warren novel. Yeah, gratuitous blood and violence.
Oh, it was fabulous. It was so violent and so bloody. It was a massacre.
Only in your head. You made it.
It was really... I loved that
book.
I read it
and saw just meadows and rainbows and... You made it all bloody and murderous.
The Gringo Maniac murder spree. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
I'm going to check
like
that
four out of five, at least. You're right there. Somewhere.
Gringo Maniac.
Murder spree.
Here we go. Yep, the Gringo Maniac murder spree is available on Amazon. Joshua P. Warren. 4.5 out of 5 on Goodreads.
Hey.
Yeah, Joshua promises lots of blood and violence in that one. I myself haven't read it. I'm not much of a reader.
It was a less popular spree candy flavor. The Gringo Maniac murder flavor.
I read it in like a day. It was excellent. It was great.
For all you readers out there, all you literate types.
We're all the pretty readers in here, aren't we?
We are bringing you Speaking of Strange on your Saturday night, and we'll be right back. It's Speaking of Strange, it's a Saturday night and it's dark out, so we're getting creepy up in here. Shelley was just telling us a little bit about the Funhouse Mummy urban legend, that there's a traveling sideshow or whatever that allegedly has a real live mummy in it. What did you think about, they had like a Smithsonian exhibit of the human body that was traveling a couple years ago.
You're thinking of the bodies exhibit, and then there was the companion one. It was two guys that had started the exhibit together. They were like partners, and they had a falling out, and so then that split into two basically identical shows. One was called Bodies, and I can't remember the name of the other one, but I saw it in New York at the Fisherman's Wharf several years ago. It was awesome. It was like the one with the guy riding the horse, like split in half, and a lot of people thought it to be in poor taste, whatever. I didn't think so at all. That was awesome because I'd never had seen what a body looked like cut. And when I say cut in half,
it's just basically
like
medical cadavers dissected and on display.
It wasn't like hacked in half with like a hacksaw or a machete or anything. It was, it was,
like I say, dissected medically.
Skin, you could see the veins, you could see all the organs, but it would be like riding a skinned horse. And so you could see the muscles like rippling through the horse and the guy and how they all interconnect. It was amazing. I didn't think it to be really creepy at all. The diseased penis in a jar was a little bit creepy, I guess.
Okay.
But overall, it was awesome. If you ever get a chance to go, it still tours, and go see that. See what we're made of.
Yeah, I don't know about seeing that stuff. I think
really?
It might haunt my nightmares.
Well, I think it was supposed to be part of like a traveling medical museum. I think that was supposed to illustrate the circulatory system.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It was academic the way it was presented. To my understanding,
it was a very educational
sort of thing.
Yeah.
But still, the fact is, it's dead bodies on display.
But they all gave consent. It's not like they were grave robbed. They'd all given consent to be, scientific, used for science.
Now, I would like to see the grave robbery exhibit. That would be interesting. The Ed Gein exhibit.
Oh, so what's I'm not familiar with that.
That would be okay.
That way.
Oh, goodness.
What is that exhibit?
I have no idea. Oh. Shelley, what else is on the list?
Well, there's the people that wake up in a bathtub with ice covering them, and there's a note saying, you need to call 911 because we took your kidney and we're selling it.
That is true, though.
Lots of stories
of
those. There's also, chain letters. The ones that say, if you don't send this to five people, some terrible thing will happen to you.
Right. I remember when they were actually letters.
Yeah,
now it's more emails.
I don't think they do chain letters.
Posting them on social media. They just don't have the same effect. But I remember the chain letters, and at the bottom of the page there would be, you have to forward copies of this on to, 10 or 12 of your friends?
Mm-hmm.
There was just a story this past week, I think, about a Facebook thing in kids doing bad things, killing or something like that. It was like a Facebook-type chain. So I'll look that up.
What was the ominous thing about the chain letters in urban legend there, Shelley? What was...
Oh, it was just illustrating that, everybody has urban legends about, somebody who knew somebody who didn't return a chain letter and all of these horrible things happened to them.
Oh, so there are some people that think that there is a jinx associated with a chain letter. Even getting one is putting you on the spot. So
you
have to respond to it
Even if you're not sure, you're so not sure that you go ahead and do it anyway, just in case there's something to it.
Then you're mailing it to your friends and putting them on the spot. It's
passing the bad
juju along.
And then we were talking about the cars where people would flash their lights at the car in front of them, which spooked the person in front, who was usually a young woman driving, and she would make it home, and the guy would get out of his car and tell the woman, go inside, lock the door, call 911 right now, because there was some knife-wielding murderer in the back seat, and the person driving the car behind had just seen the man in the knife and was trying to warn her. Apparently, I remember hearing stories like that when I was growing up.
That seems a little bit believable.
It does. To me. I'd still look in the backseat.
Yes.
I do every time I leave the parking lot here.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of these stories, these urban legends, just play on primal fears. And some of them might just urge you to take precautions that it's always a good idea to take anyway. Okay, that's going to do it. Dark 30 is coming up, so now's the time to bid adieu to Speaking of Strange, if you don't want to be offended, because we got some crazy stuff happening next hour. Stick around if you're into that sort of thing.